And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Hello, New York. Good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard the John Gambling Show. It is our Friday get-together with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at 77 WABC. Good morning.
Good morning. Great weather.
Beautiful. Like a chilly.
It's chilly. Be chilly for tonight's game, but not a cloud in the sky on the forecast for the weekend.
But
same
the Mets
thing.
Mets are rocking and rolling, aren't they?
I wish the Yankees were, too, but I couldn't be happier for the Mets. I was at the game last night. Got there a little late. I had two or three events to go to, and I didn't get there until about the fourth inning, but I saw all the scoring, and it was exciting, and people are thrilled and, you know, jumping up and down. There's a lot of spirit, and I think it's just great that, you know, for New York to have a championship team, and I think the Yankees, quite honestly, were champions too. I think they had a great season, and I'm thrilled that, if the stories are right, that Joe Torre is coming back, but because I do think he's a great manager. But you know, both these teams have given this city great entertainment over
and
the summer.
The numbers of seats, of backsides in the seats in both of these stadiums this year are record breaking.
Sure, and we have two new stadiums going up. You just look over, you know, you look next door to Yankee Stadium and next door to Shea Stadium, and they're already in the ground.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Hopefully they will continue to do as well as they have.
They have not asked me to play either one of them.
I'm surprised. But
first base, that'd be perfect.
Some people have just no sense of right and wrong.
Well, you know, I'm available, but they have to talk to my agent.
All right, let's talk about, speaking of baseball, the sad story of Corey Lytle crashing his plane into the building the other day, and the disagreement between you, apparent disagreement between you, the governor, the senator from New York, Anthony Weiner, the rest of them, all crying to close down the airspace.
Look, we have the FAA to set the rules. They have, over the years, done a spectacular job. Air flying in this country is phenomenally safe. They've done a great job. You leave it to the professionals. They have to balance security, ability to control planes, keep one set of planes away from the other, worry about what's on the ground, what's in the air. They want to make sure that people have the right to and the ability to come and go and use air as part of the transportation system. You got to leave it to them. Setting policy by rushing to have a press conference isn't exactly the best ways to run the country, and I just leave it to the FAA. They've done a great job so far. And also, all this yelling and screaming isn't going to change them. They are professionals, and they'll decide to do what they want. And you don't want to have the politicians involved in setting policies that influence safety.
The speaking of safety, the fact is that general aviation is almost as safe as anything there is to do.
Yeah, there are lots of dangerous sports. I think just we should be, you know, you have to feel sorry and prayers for the families of these two
young men.
I mean, you know, the one gets all the publicity because of his visibility as a sports figure. The other one, just as tragic.
Tyler Stenger, I believe his name was.
People say he's a good instructor. He hadn't flown in a while. He took an instructor with him. That's smart. No reason to think they would do anything wrong. It is complicated airspace here. If you're not used to flying in busy areas,
you're a pilot.
It requires when you're flying in New York, you have to be able to know where you're going and understand instructions, and things happen much more rapidly. And professionals learn, and amateurs that are competent learn to do it. If these two didn't have a lot of experience in New York airspace, if any, for all I know. Let's leave this up to the FAA. Every time there's something that gives you a chance to rush to the microphones, we all have opinions. I've always thought that there's a reason why we don't have votes on everything. You have agencies that are staffed with professionals that make rational decisions based on the facts and with the benefit of time of looking and seeing what happened, doing an investigation, seeing how one policy fits with other policies, and nothing stands alone. And there's no reason to think the FAA hasn't been doing what's right and won't be doing what's right, and their needs and their decisions change. Today, for example, you cannot fly near Yankee Stadium or Shea Stadium within 5 miles when there's a game on. Now, before 9/11, that was not a problem. They changed the rules because they felt in this day and age we'd be safer with that. Banning all aircraft isn't any more the right answer than having no restrictions. And New York does have an awful lot of restrictions in terms of where you can go and what you can do.
People are saying that they obviously banned flights over the Hudson River, over the East River. When you start to think about what that would mean, you've got helicopters, you've got commercial seaplane operations, you've got obviously all the other things. And if you did ban it, how on earth would the FAA air traffic controllers possibly enforce any of this?
Well,
would you scramble airplanes every time something came in?
You can't do that. Part of the problem is... What you have regulation, and the regulations decide whether you have to be actively controlled or not. It doesn't change anything in terms of safety. The regulators would prefer to have lots of small planes and helicopters going back and forth. If they stay in these corridors below a certain altitude and within the confines, then the FAA says their controllers don't have to worry about it. If their controllers had to worry about it, I don't know that that would make it safer. It might make it much more dangerous.
Because their eyes are off commercial airlines,
right,
and
it gets so complex. So, you know, the trouble is in our society, anytime anything goes wrong, we add a level of checks. The trouble is that every time you add another level of security, it doesn't necessarily improve security. It may very well make it so complex that it's less secure or less efficient or less reliable. And that's just it. But rushing to the microphone and saying, I want to do something else, leave it to the professionals.
Senator Schumer said that he thinks that the same rules that apply in Washington should apply here, which is a 15-mile no-fly zone over the Capitol. That would mean you would have to shut down not only Newark, but LaGuardia. And I think Kennedy probably runs almost 15 miles by air. And because you can't fly near Washington.
No, National Airport, in all fairness, is pretty much downtown, and they do allow commercial planes. They used to allow...
There's no general aviation in
that. No, and that really hurts their business. And one of the things that the FAA has to balance is that kind of security with the ability to have an economy. If businesses can't come and go, that's not good. Now, somebody's going to rush to the microphone this afternoon and say, oh, he doesn't understand, businesses would do it anyways. You're right. Some things, you can't point to any one thing. But we want to have the ability to come and go. People want to have the ability to sightsee. People want to have the ability to enjoy their lives and their sport. And you just want to make sure that it doesn't put any undue risks on everybody else. And there will always be some risks. You just want to keep it in balance. I've always thought that in Washington, there is too much of that. The fact of the matter is a small plane really can't do all that much damage. There are other ways. No terrorist is going to use a small plane. They would use a big plane, obviously, but a small plane, no. And that Washington should not have the... kinds of restrictions that they have because we don't need them elsewhere. But that's up to the FAA and whether we need them or not. And Senator Schumer has a right to his opinion, Governor Pataki, and the normal gaggle of congressmen and congresspeople who rush to the microphone anytime they think they can get on the air. Leave it to the professionals. That's what we have them for, and that's why we pay them. And they've done a pretty good job.
We've gone a little long in this segment. Let me take a break. Coming right back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg and you at 77 WABC.
Hear it now.
All right, we continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Again, talking about the threat real fast. I don't want to belabor this, but the threat of small aircraft. I was saying with Curtis and Coopy before 10 o'clock that if you're a terrorist, there are planes available on the end of a cell phone. Send me a business jet. And there's all
the truth of the matter is a small plane doesn't carry very much weight after you put a little bit of fuel to turn the engine over and to carry the pilot. There's a lot of ways you could do damage, and we have the greatest police department in the world, and we work as hard as we possibly can to make sure that nothing happens. And since 9/11, we've been lucky, smart, God's been looking at us any way you want to define it, but the truth of the matter is we've not had any incidents. We have caught people with maps in their pockets. I mean, there's the stuff about the Brooklyn Bridge where the guy thought it was too hot and he which means too difficult for him to attack the bridge and pulled away. But it's a never ending battle we're going to have, and I think you got to be very careful not to give up all of your rights in the interest of security. If you want to be absolutely 100% safe, you can't ever leave your house. You can't even be in your house. You can't do anything. You can't live.
As if we didn't need another reminder about the threats here, a guy by the name of Diren Barot yesterday pleaded guilty in London of targeting the Stock Exchange, the World Bank headquarters in Washington, the Citigroup building here in the city, the Prudential building. He pleaded guilty that, yeah, he wanted to blow these things up.
Yeah, I mean, there are people that want to do that. And that's the challenge that we as a society are going to have in this world. Let us pray that someday we won't need to have the guard up that we do now. But I can tell you, for the foreseeable future, it looks like we need it. And I can also promise you that for the next 3 years and 2+ months, this city is going to do everything it can to keep everybody here safe. And at the same time, let people go about enjoying life and not violate their civil rights. And there's difficulties all the time. And people that want to say things that incite others or things that you find distasteful or worse, limitations that make some sense on where you can and can't go. And at the same time, you don't want so many limitations that you can't go out and stroll the streets.
Chicago mayor says the story this morning, they are looking for the 2016 Olympics to make a bid. And one of the things in their proposal is that he will, as part of security, put up a camera at every single corner in Chicago. Is that an overkill?
Well, number one, Richie Daley is one of the best mayors this country has ever had. I've always thought that I never knew his father. People say his father was a good mayor. I didn't know him, but I've gotten to know Richie and this guy. Chicago's a city that works. That's their slogan, and it does. It's clean. It's growing. They have convention facilities, which we envy. He's done a spectacular job in terms of putting cameras up in every corner. You know, if it fights crime, I guess the civil liberties issue of somebody watching you, that's come and gone. There are cameras today at virtually every corner. So many buildings, so many stores, apartment buildings and commercial buildings have cameras that whenever there's a crime, one of the first things police do is they go to all the buildings in the neighborhood and say, do you have cameras and can we look at the tapes? So, you know, more and more.
On this plane crash, they'll be looking for security camera tapes.
But they're probably not pointed up in the air, and it was a building near the water, so nobody on the other side. But, the police will go to every building just in case. And then there are a lot of people who have video cameras, happen to have them in their hands when something happens. You know, you see
them
in the paper.
Your cell phone can now take
video. Yeah, absolutely. So this issue of Big Brother watching. Big Brother probably is watching already anyways, and you can have an intellectual debate as to whether it's right or wrong, but in a practical sense, it's here, and we're not rolling it back.
All right. There was a story in the paper, a survey taken by the American Highway Users Alliance, one of those major institutions.
It is major.
On evacuation plans, New York City coming out at near the very bottom of their list of plans that they think will work. Now, I understand that they never even contacted the city about
it. Well, if they did, I didn't know about it. I think it is safe to say that when you have a city of 8.2 million people has 525-odd miles of coastline, which limits where you can go, you would not be able to very quickly evacuate a city of this size, particularly Manhattan, where you'd have to go by bridge or tunnel. To get out.
Long
the Bronx
Island.
Can go up into Westchester. Brooklyn and Queens can go to Nassau County, although if something were happening in New York, Nassau and Suffolk, the traffic's probably going to be coming to us, and Nassau and Suffolk would have to go through New York City. And there's no question the subways and the tunnels and the bridges could not accommodate evacuating millions of people in a short period of time. Just think about what Friday night and at rush hour. And try going down Fifth Avenue during Christmas season. season. I mean, that's just a fact that of the geography and the number of people. What we do have here is we have enormous number of plans which are well thought out and practiced as to what you would do in different kinds of situations. And then we recognize some things that, you know, I don't know, a nuclear bomb.
What do you do?
There would be nothing you could do kind of thing at the beginning. Then you'd have to. But for hurricanes, we have some warning. We have evacuation plans, which we're convinced will work, which we practiced, which we have signed up people. We've done as detailed planning as you possibly can. For some things, the interesting one is the reverse. What do you do if you don't want people to leave? Let's assume there's a contagious disease.
And you don't want everybody just spreading it around.
That's exactly right. Now, that's a much more difficult thing because in the first case, it's traffic and capacity that keeps you from getting out. In the other case, it's the authorities trying to keep you in. Just picture how that would work.
But
that's just the real world that we live in. We live in a complex industrial society where we get great benefits from that, but we also get some risks and limitations. New York City has a life expectancy greater than the country as a whole. One of the downsides, I suppose, is if you had to flee,
you're probably not going to be able to. Because quarantine is actually, as I understand it, one of the things that is certainly considered if indeed there was a pandemic of some sort.
Well, people talk about it, and one of the interesting issues is when you get not just the Ivy Tower guys, but you get the real planners who have to deal in the real world, and you bring in police and transportation and as school system and the fire and everybody else in office emergency management, and you say, okay, now you say evacuate. Great. What, where, how? When we get them, what do we do when we get the people to where we want to evacuate them to? Is there going to be water and food and security? And what do you do if they bring along their pets? And, you know, it's a complex world.
It certainly is.
And all this planning, which is why Joe Bruno, the Office of Emergency Management, has done a spectacular job in trying to bring some order and sensibility to some problems, which are maybe unsolvable, but you want to have at least the ability to do the best job that we possibly can with whatever resources we have.
All right. We're going to get back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg. It's the half hour. Time for a break right now. A quick break with George Weber. We continue here on the John Gambling Show, Friday edition. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here as well. Low-cost housing. We've talked about it a number of times here. There is a plan afoot, I understand, to make that more attractive to developers by changing some tax.
The city has tax incentives to build. It is a waste of the city's money to give those incentives where people were going to build anyways. The idea of tax incentives is to get people to do something they would not otherwise do without those tax incentives. Yeah, well, in this case, it's a carrot. You don't need the stick. We can't force people to do anything, so the stick doesn't work, but a carrot. But, you know, for example, if you've got a very attractive neighborhood where everybody wants to build, just a waste of the taxpayers' money to give somebody a credit to do so, particularly at the same time in some of these neighborhoods we're trying to downzone because they're overbuilding and the infrastructure can't handle it and the people in the neighborhood don't want more building. So what we're trying to do is to change the places you get these tax credits for and the ways that they're given out. They used to be you could sell your credits to others. That turned out not to really benefit the public and just a waste of money. There are places where you would get them, and we say, oh, you're only going to get them now if you build what they call 80-20, 80% market rate, 20% affordable housing. But it is trying to change current laws on the books to reflect the current reality. And, you know, whenever you try to do that, there's the usual yelling and screaming, I have a right to do it, and the Cassandras will say the world will come to an end. The truth of the matter is that the city is doing very well. Some places are so hot, you just don't have to waste the taxpayers' money.
So the developers are screaming unfair.
Yeah, because
unfair.
They want it. Come on. You know, I've always objected to trying to bribe companies, which is the only way to phrase it, with tax incentives to come to the city and stay in the city. I think this city is the place where most of these companies can profit the best, get the best employees, and have the best access to markets and media and all the other things, and that they will come here if we keep crime down and we improve the cultural institutions and the parks, and that's where we should be investing our money, and that will get you the businesses you want. There was talk about giving tax incentives to newspapers that were going to move out of town. Come on. I mean, they did some of that, but they weren't going to move.
I would also assume that when you do that, it just sort of enables those that think that they're going to come here and get a free handout, and that the first thing they do is come to the City Hall.
It's even worse than that, I think, because let's assume you're a good corporate citizen and you love New York and you want to stay here. Now, the guy next door threatens to leave unless we give him a tax incentive. So you give it to him because you're afraid he'll leave. How do you look the good guy in the eye? And the good guy also, incidentally, has an obligation to his or her stockholders to get the most money for them. So it's just, you know, the incentives are all wrong. If we keep making this city better, people will want to live here. If we keep making the city better, people will want to work here and have their business here. Last night I was honored, really it was the city being honored, at a movie directors organization, and it was an award for because we've kept a lot of movie business in the city, and now people are moving their movie making from Canada back to New York City, from Eastern Europe back to New York City, from the West Coast here. Now, this is the Directors Guild, which is – I was just so thrilled to be there with all of these famous people. But we did give a tax incentive, and that did make a difference. That does help. But the real reason these guys want to make movies here is they will tell you the unions here are as cooperative as any place else, maybe more so, and the quality of the work that you get from their members is great. The scenes, you can't get better backdrops than in New York.
Can't build
it. Actors and actresses want to live here and work here. You know, it just all fits together. And when it comes to housing, people want to live here. That's what's happening. We're going to add more people to this city this decade than live in Pittsburgh. And you talk about affordable housing. Our 165,000 units, which is just the ones that we're involved in. There's a lot of other stuff being built by the private sector. The 165,000 units that we've committed to build or rehab will hold 500,000 people. That's more the number of people that live in Atlanta. So we're doing a lot. The problem we have is that more and more people want to live here and fewer people want to leave. Our population is now up to 8.2 million. And so is there enough housing? No. Can we do more? Yes. But you also want to make sure the private sector gets the encouragement to do it. And the ways they get the encouragement is improve the parks, bring down crime, improve the schools, do all of the things that make this the most fun, livable, safe city in the world. You do that. You don't need tax.
Speaking of parks, Bryant Park, where they have Fashion Week, you say find another spot?
It's out. The fashion industry has been so successful that it's outgrown the park. That's the good news. The bad news is we've been unable to find another place that works given what they need. You certainly don't want them with all the jobs in the fashion industry leaving New York City. So what we said is, you go back to Bryant Park, which may not be optimal, but it's the best we can do at the moment, and let's look elsewhere. Another reason I come back, I hate to keep beating on this, but, you know, we have places people want to have big events here, and we don't have the place this would have been perfect.
Would be the West Side.
That's
Javits Center.
It had nothing to do with football. It had to do with the future of the city. So we got to go forward. And so I keep looking for a place. Anybody's got any brilliant ideas, it's got to be accessible. It's got to be in a place that the people in the fashion industry know and are comfortable going to. And 6th Avenue is, you know, traditionally the fashion area. This is close to it. But for the moment, we're going to keep them there.
Explain to me what's going on with the Moynihan Station and why the governor and the legislature are fighting with each other over this.
I can explain what's going on with the Moynihan Station.
Nothing.
I can't explain the rest. I'll leave that to you. The politics of this, I believe, and I'll leave it at this. This is the belief of our administration, that the project to the Moynihan Station project is a very desirable one for the city. An extension of it called Plan B that would involve lots of other pieces as well would be great. But the challenges to get Plan B done are very significant. And to not do Plan A, which would, I think, give you a better shot at Plan B, if you don't do Plan A, people are going to say, if they wouldn't do that simple one, how are we going to get the other
one
done?
The moving of Madison Square Garden and all of that and the towers.
Correct. I mean, but, you know, if you only will do the ultimate, you'll never do anything. And the politics I'll leave to you and Curtis and Kuby, and I'll stay out of all of that for the moment. But the city is going to have a very tough time doing Plan B. I hope we get help from the state. But the truth of the matter is that Plan A, we could get going right now, and it would be great for the city. And, you know, the governor's invested a lot in this. He's on his way out, finishing 12 years, and it should not have anything to do with who is governor. It should not have anything to do with who is in which party. I don't think it should have a lot to do with the state. But it is some state land, and we need state. There's some little bit of state land involved. It's mainly we need state money, and they should look at it as to whether or not the city thinks it's good. And I'll leave it at that.
All right, we're going to leave it here. Take a break. 1-800-848-WABC is our telephone number. As you know, at the end of the show, we let you ask the mayor the questions. 1-800-848-WABC. We'll be right back. WABC. We continue here, and it's your turn, 1-800-848-WABC, to ask Mayor Michael Bloomberg some questions. Mr. Mayor, last week somebody asked a question about the 79th Street boat basin, and what were you going to do about it and fixing it up?
You think that I don't listen and I don't pay attention? Well, I did. It turns out it was not Economic Development Corporation. This is done by the Parks Department. We did talk to the commissioner of the Parks Department, who says things aren't as bad as the caller painted the picture. They have a whole bunch of capital projects to work on, and some will help this improve this.
Great resource.
It's a great resource. I mean, you know, keep in mind, there's always the criticism of the Parks Department. They spend too much on Manhattan. If you look at the numbers, that's not true, but we try to make sure that all boroughs get similar kinds of services based on their needs and their size and that sort of thing. But I did look into it, and he promises me he'll do what he can given the constraints of the budget.
All right, fair enough. The phones are open. We've got some callers. Where do you want to start?
Richard in Queens.
Richard in Queens. You've got the mayor and Mike John Gambling here at 77 WABC. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you for having me. A quick question. Today's Daily News ran an article about the Brooklyn Navy Yard Development Corporation evicting New York Crane and Equipment out of the Navy Yard to make room for other interests. Given the fact that New York Crane is a vital part of the 9/11 recovery, was there for months doing the recovery, is going to be part of the rebuilding, and even does work with the film industry, can this be something done to help keep New York Crane's jobs in Brooklyn?
All right, let's see what the answer
is. Well, if they can find other space, I think they pay about $4 a square foot for space, which currently goes in its 20s. And the other answer is that Brooklyn Navy Yard is a place where you want to have lots of jobs per square foot. And crane business, which is important, they need big areas to lay out a big crane, but there's not a lot of people working there while they just use it for storage. So it'd be great if they can find some other place. The fact that they were, cranes were used in the 9/11 recovery effort, I don't know what that has to do with this. That's not try to use 9/11 for commercial gain. That has nothing to do with it. The bottom line is the Brooklyn Navy Yard people have to find ways to help the economy, not just with the film. There are plenty of other kinds of businesses moving into the Navy Yard. It's an area that has been a desolate, abandoned buildings for decades.
They've been trying to get this thing rolling for a long time over there.
Not just trying. We've really – the Brooklyn the Navy Yard, the organization that runs it has really done a great job. There are a lot of people working there, a lot of new businesses coming in, giving people business and generating tax revenues.
All right. Thank you very much, Richard. 1-800-848-WABC. Next on the list,
Joe in Staten Island.
Up to the top of the list. And, Joe, good morning. You've got the mayor. Go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
Mayor, on the Brooklyn Bridge, the police has stationed patrol cars taking up one lane of traffic and idling all night long and causing a lot of traffic. I wonder if there's a better way to do police surveillance of that bridge. I remember you speaking about
the security
of the bridge.
While you're talking, I'm writing myself a note. I will talk to the police commissioner. He and I have discussed it. The issue is, for a variety of security reasons, which I'd prefer not to discuss, this is an iconic bridge, and we want to make sure that everybody's protected. Whether or not there's a better ways to provide that protection without holding up traffic, I'm going to talk to Ray Kelly about. You are 100% right that it does disrupt traffic. And when I go across the bridge, I get as annoyed as you do.
You mean you don't turn on those flashing lights like you
don't do? I actually use flashing lights and sirens the other day to get up to 72nd Street.
It's a rare event.
It is a very rare event. It is very scary when, I had new appreciation for firefighters and police officers and ambulance drivers who are going through traffic with lights and sirens. It's dangerous. It's dangerous for the people in the cars and trucks, and dangerous for the people outside. Uh-oh. Fortunately, they do a good job.
All right. Back to the telephone.
Lynn.
Lynn in New York City. You've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. Mayor Bloomberg, can you hear me?
I can, loud and clear.
Okay, good. I'm hoping that you will eventually address the spreading bed bug problem in New York. People are bringing them back from their visits from hotels. People are picking up furniture on the street that is infested with bed bugs, mattresses. And I myself have been a victim. It's awful.
Hey, Lynn, I know some people that have been a victim of it as well. It's just an awful situation.
The good news is it's not life-threatening. The bad news is it is a real annoyance. I have talked to the Department of HPD and to the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene about the problem. There is no bed bug czar. I've asked them to take another look and see if we couldn't be more helpful. The bottom line is you don't pick up furniture on the street, and, there are things you can do, insecticides and washing.
But they're very hard to get rid of.
One of the interesting things is when there's a story in the paper, the 311 calls go up. When there's no story in the paper, they go down. So a little bit of this, you think, is just, I don't know if it's heightened sensitivity or just people saying, I couldn't sleep last night. There must have been bed bugs. But there is an outbreak. I don't think there's any question about that. We've got to do something.
All right.
Bob on Staten Island.
Bob, you've got the mayor, and you've got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr.
Good morning.
For the last 8 years, my property in Staten Island, the real estate tax has gone up for the last 8 years. Now that the property took a real dive in Staten Island, are you going to reassess it and bring it down?
Yeah, the assessments do go up and down. They don't go up as fast as the values. The laws limit the amount you can have in any 1 year or 5 year period, there's a variety of things, so that when your property doubles in value, which has happened to a lot of property in New York City over the last 4 or 5 years, your taxes didn't double, they went up. The bad news is, on the way down, they won't go down as fast as...
Why is that?
Because we need the money, because the firefighters and police officers and teachers and everybody else wants to get paid. I mean, I want to get my dollar a year, too,
It's kind of one of those laws of physics, isn't it? The taxes go up faster than they go down.
The sad thing is somebody's got to pay for services. Everybody wants services, but nobody wants to pay for them. Surprise, surprise.
We're out of time, Mr. Mayor. I look forward to seeing you next Friday.
Cannot wait.
Have a great week. Stick around. We've got lots to do, including Chris Wallace and author Vince Flynn will be in the studio as well. Stay with me. It's 77. 77-